Introduction to the sermon. And the title of the sermon is In Patience. There are different kinds of patience, and maybe I'll touch on that a little bit as we go through the sermon. But you know, there's patience in our daily lives, which we can address. But as we're talking in this sermon about patience, it's more than just getting irritated at somebody because of what they said or how they behaved. This is a bigger, more important kind of patience. But I would say that the kind of patience that it's addressing comes in our lives from the fact that we learn to be patient at an everyday level in how we behave toward other people and events. On a daily basis, this world is seeing increasing difficulties which will culminate in a dissolution of all of the countries and the nations and the societies of this world as we know them today. That's certain. Some of those daily events that we've been exposed to in the last few months, just to build your remembrances up of these things and how we are being affected by them, how the potential for us to be affected by them much more than we have been already exists. We had the riots in St. Louis. Michael Brown, a young man there, was shot and killed by a policeman by the name of Wilson. Riots ensued. Riots weren't limited to what happened in Ferguson, Missouri. Riots ensued in a lot of demonstrations, short of riots, ensued in many locations because of this. Yeah, not to get into the specifics of this particular situation or how or why, just what is going on and how these are symptoms of what ultimately is going to come to pass in this world. New York City, another case that we fairly recently, were exposed to, where Eric Garner, a man that lived there, was under arrest for selling Lucy's. I don't know if you know what Lucy's are. Do you know what Lucy's are? Lucy's are loose cigarettes. And he was an entrepreneur of sorts. He would send to North Carolina, get cigarettes which were not tax paid, because the taxes on a package of cigarettes in New York quite high. And he would get those packages of cigarettes and he would stand on the street and sell them one at a time. And he was able to generate revenue by selling one cigarette at a time. Loose cigarettes. That's what a Lucy is. And he had been arrested something like 36 times for various things. A lot of them were for the very same offense. And when they tried to arrest him this time, he was a little bit, impatient. He was impatient. And as a result, the police, I thought it was more than should have happened. The police shouldn't have done this, but they didn't violate their regulations. And he ends up losing his life. That's another thing, just what's going on. Something at a national and a worldwide level is we're seeing now currency wars. Wars between the different nations economically, which relate to the currency of the nations. Here I think in terms of this, I don't know what's going to end up being the result of this, but the United States has been spending money that we don't have and which we have no hope of ever having on a legitimate basis. And we've been selling that debt to other nations in the world. We've been selling it primarily to the Chinese and to the Arabs because they have extra money. And they're holding our debt, and we should be obligated to repay that debt. However, we continue to spend, and there's not going to be any way that we will be able to repay that debt. Situations as they exist. The situation in Russia, and I would say as well, in Ukraine, some of those other nations in Eastern Europe, the Russian ruble has shrunk to a value of somewhere around 1 1/2 cents. Big problem if you live in Russia, especially as food has not grown very much in Russia. You would think Russia had lots and lots of agriculture where they grow food. They don't. They don't grow very much of their own food. They buy their food primarily, I guess, from Western Europe because the Western Europeans grow twice as much as they need, and they dump all of the excess in Eastern Europe. So the farmers in Eastern Europe can't afford to plant because they don't make enough money off of what they're producing. So difficulty in the Russian-speaking world. I don't know how many of you are aware of it, but we have been getting an extraordinary number of requests in our email from the Russian-speaking world who want religious literature, especially the booklet, Ten Commandments. And we don't have that booklet in Russian. We only have it in English. And I had so many requests on the last trip, even though I had sent and asked for maybe 100 copies of it and had gotten those copies in Tartu, I ended up being 50 copies short of that booklet to send out, Ten Commandments. Seems to be a very popular booklet there among the Russians. And I was hoping that we would be able to translate the booklet into Russian by the time I go back so we could give them something in their own language which would be helpful. And I look at probably the additional interest in spiritual matters coming from that part of the world as being related to the conditions that they're experiencing there. The deprivation, the hunger, the difficulty as a result of what's going on. These are things going on throughout the world. Christ has told us at one point, these are the beginnings of sorrows. The symptoms which we see are going to increase and they're going to get worse and worse. Question? What things do we need to do in order to survive in these times? Now, you already know the scripture that I'm going to use here as I'm getting to the end of the introduction. In your patience, possess you your souls. You know, these are the beginnings of sorrows, Christ had said, in this same time when he was, at least as it's recorded in Matthew, these are the beginnings of sorrows. Sorrows are going to get worse, a lot worse. And the Bible tells us that in our patience, possess you your souls. What does it mean here about souls? Is it, the essence that God takes and holds and puts back into you at the resurrection? That's not what it's saying. It's not the vitality of plants that it's saying. It's talking about if you are patient, you will possess it, your life. You will live through these circumstances, patience being a key. Does it guarantee you that you will? No. In fact, the Bible is very clear that a number of us will serve as martyrs. But it's giving us a key here to how we should behave. Patience. And your patience possess you, your souls. So what I want to do here in the sermon, instruct us, and that's me too, because I need patience probably a lot more than you do. I could tend to be more impatient probably than anyone here, anyone else here, except for hate, well, even more than Hazel. I'd like to start by looking at what Christ told us that makes this kind of patience really difficult. It's what's coming up April the 2nd, Passover, and we have been told at that time that we're going to be in a difficult situation. Let's read John chapter 17. Starting in chapter 14, Christ is, John chapter 17, the context of John chapter 17 is the prayer that Christ prays to the Father the night before he is crucified. He says, I have given them your word. Christ gave the Father's word to you and I. The world has hated them. It's like, oh, the world didn't hate them until I gave them your word. But when I gave them your word, the world hated them. Why? Because the world is an enemy against the truth of God. The world is under the control of other spiritual influences. And as a result, if you have the truth of God, you practice the truth of God, you are an enemy of the world. The world hates them because they are not a part of the world. They're not part of the world. We talked about the meaning of the word soul, and we have a completely different understanding of that word than most of the world has. We're not of the world. Christ said, and they're not of the world, even the same as I was not of the world. So there's an irreconcilable spiritual conflict which is occurring. You and I are inextricably involved in that conflict. We can't extract ourselves from it because we made an agreement, a covenant with God that we wouldn't sacrifice His truth for anything, not even our lives. Christ made that agreement, didn't he? When you and I are baptized, we make the same agreement. We will stand for that truth no matter what. So we agreed to be a part of that conflict. Not that we like it. We'd rather have a whole different situation. But we are a part of that conflict. Verse 15. I do not pray. Oh, no. Do not pray that you should take them out of the world. Why wouldn't he make that prayer? Seems like it would be much better for us if he would have just said, I pray you'll take them out of the world. No, he didn't make that prayer. I don't pray that you should be taken out of the world. You're going to be left in it. We talked about some of the symptoms that are gradually occurring more and more as we look at this world coming closer and closer toward total dissolution. But that you should keep them from the evil, or some of the translations say from the evil one, from the things that Satan will bring about upon God's church. They are not, Christ says about you and I, they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Pretty complimentary right there, isn't it? He's likening you and I to him, saying that we're not of the world, even as he's, I mean, when you think about it, if we are like Christ in that regard, that's really something incredible to say. And then he says, verse 17, sanctify them through your truth. What is it that sets you apart and makes you different from all of the rest of the world? I mean, there's a world and then there's few of us. Few of us. He says, in his prayer to God the Father on the eve of his death, and you have to think this is really, really important to him that he includes this, sanctify them through your truth. God the Father has given us truth. It is the truth that sanctifies us. It is the truth that makes us different. It is the truth that makes us the enemies of the world. But we're subject to having to be sanctified. Well, it's not having to, but we are sanctified. We are privileged to be sanctified by the truth of God. How much is it worth to us? Would we ever turn it loose for any reason? Just as an aside, what was a big casualty of what happened in Ferguson, Missouri? Truth. Not the truth of God, but just general truth. You know, that everything that came out of there was essentially not true. Without going any further into it than that, there was a truth was a casualty there. Verse 18, Christ says, as you sent me into the world, so I also send them. Who is them? Them is us. You know, it's in the words of Pogo, maybe, them is us. I also send them into the world. For their sakes, Christ says, I sanctify myself. Sets himself apart for a holy purpose, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. It's the truth of God that sets you apart. And for a holy purpose, what is that holy purpose? Ultimately, it is to reign with Christ 1,000 years and help bring about all of mankind into the family of God. That's quite a sanctification, isn't it? That's quite a setting apart. That is really giving to you in your life a sense of purpose that is truly holy. Difficulty. You've been left in the world. Christ said so. The world is like a sewer. This world is like a sewer. It's hard to stay clean, the way I put it sometimes. It's hard to stay clean while you're swimming in the sewer. That's us as a part of this world. My opinion, these are Passover instructions. These are the instructions that God gave to us. He's not taking us out of the world. He's leaving us in the world. We've got to be a part of this world. Very difficult. My opinion, no more difficult task that God has given to us than that we will remain a part of this world and be sanctified, set apart differently, and still we can't separate ourselves out of it. Time comes, Bible talks about, I look at it as maybe this is almost the time. Maybe it is just a little past the time. There isn't a way to know exactly when this is being fulfilled. But I look at Revelation chapter 18 as saying to us something that's a little bit different than what the instruction that Christ gave to us at the Passover. And I don't think it's taking away the instructions of the Passover, but yet it tells us to do something different. The context here is the end of the age. A very powerful sort of presentation here. Prophetic presentation in Revelation chapter 18. And starting in verse 1, John, who records this, he saw it. He was in vision, and he saw these things, and he recorded them. He said, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. This angel cried mightily with a strong voice, verse 2, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, two fallens. Repetition there might have something interesting to say. And here is what Babylon the Great is like. End of the age. Is there a Babylon the Great? That's the context here of this scripture. End of the age. And he is saying Babylon the Great is fallen. Did Babylon fall once before? Babylon fell once before, didn't it? We could even make a case that Babylon fell twice before, and now we're living in Babylon, and we're looking at it falling again. And Babylon, the society, the world in which we live, is characterized by this mighty angel as being the habitation of devils. And the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. That's a diagnosis. You know, you say, here's the patient. We brought the patient into the doctor. And here the doctor comes into the room like this angel, and he looks at the patient, and he gives the diagnosis. Habitation of devils, the hold of every clean, every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean bird. This patient's in severe difficulty. And say, verse 3, all nations. Here's something I'd like you, maybe you haven't noticed, that I kind of focused on a little bit here. Have drunk of the wine of her. You'll find her used here in this verse three times. Her fornication, the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Which this is speaking allegorically about fornication, but it's an evil. It's an evil that's going on between her. Who is her? Well, everywhere that I can think of when prophecy comes to pass, or prophecy is being identified, her relates to a religion, religious system, or a multiplicity of religious systems that are somehow all connected. The religions of Satan, what I would think it's talking about here. All nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Now, we tend to see that with the Muslims, don't we? We think with all of the things that we characterize them for, they're certainly evil. But what about how God looks at it? False Christianity is just as evil. You know, false religious systems, whether you talk about the Muslims or the false Christians or the Buddhist or whatever system, they have brought about a lot of difficulty on the earth. All nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Boom, it sort of cuts off at that point. The doctor who came in and gave a diagnosis, boom, he's out of the room. And there's another voice. This voice is addressed directly to you and me. I heard another voice, verse 4, from heaven saying, it's kind of different from what Christ said in the Passover, come out of her, my people. Now, we were left in until some point at the end of the age, but it says here, come out of her, my people, that you are not partakers of two things. Her sins. And that you receive not of her plagues. Because there are going to be a lot of plagues. It's saying, come out of her, so that there's a point in time coming. I don't know when that point in time is. I don't know if we're at that point. I don't think we're quite there yet. But it's just saying, come out. There's going to be a point in time when you and I are to come out of this system and not be a part of it as much as we have been, although I don't think we can ever come completely out of it. I don't think that's what Christ has left us, and we are going to be a part of it in some ways right up to the end. So that you are not partakers of her sins. That's the greatest thing that between the two, which would you rather not be? Partakers of the sins of the society or partakers of the plagues that the society is going to receive? To me, I don't want to be partakers of the sins because that's an eternal problem. Partakers of the plagues, well, that won't be pleasant, but you know, it won't be eternal either. The second voice. It's not a condemnatory voice. It's an explanatory voice, isn't it? Something instructive for us to do. And this is being spoken to a small audience of people, isn't it? Come out of her, my people. My people. First one was about the world. You know, the first angel who came in, he was talking about the world as a whole. Verse 5, her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. And so that's the instruction we're given. This approach is not going to be well received as we withdraw to the extent that we can, and we already have to a significant degree, haven't we? But we've got a long ways to go as far as being withdrawn from this society. We know that there's going to be difficulties. There will be a time of martyrdom coming. Our obligation, let's go on, that's kind of to set up what we're talking about, patience. In your patience, possess you your soul. Paul writes in Romans 13, and this is a difficulty for us. It is a matter of manifesting patience as well and properly applying certain attitude. Romans chapter 13, let's read the first 7 verses there. Let every soul be subject to the higher powers. Now, Paul is writing to the church in Rome 2,000 years ago, and we might say, well, they didn't have to go through the same things that we have to go through. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know who has it more difficult. Roman Empire wasn't exactly, you know, the most congenial place to be. Every soul be subject to the higher powers. There is no power but from God. The powers that are ordained are of God. And so, in being subject, that's a way of exercising patience, isn't it? It is a kind of patience. In your patience, possess you your souls. And I can look at what happened to Michael Brown and Eric Garner. If they had exhibited a little more patience, they wouldn't have lost their lives. Whosoever therefore resists the power, resists the ordinances of God. So we have to stay, to the extent that we can, and we'll get to a place where Paul says that, to the extent that it is possible, remain subject to the powers that be. If we resist, it says, bad thing here, if we resist, we will receive damnation, verse 2. For rulers are not a terror to good works. I have to struggle a little bit with that. Sometimes rulers are a terror to some kinds of good works. But let's really look at the kind of good works that maybe Paul is referring to here. Feeding the hungry or rulers. I don't know that any case that rulers are giving anyone a hard time for feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting the sick or helping and healing the sick. Those kinds of good works, I don't know of any rulers that are a terror to those kinds of things. But to evil. Will you not then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall have praise of the rulers, whoever they are, of the same. The ruler is a minister of God, it says, to you for good. But if you do that which is evil, be afraid. Because this ruler, this policeman, this soldier, whoever it is that has this authority, does not bear the sword in vain. He is a minister of God, a revenger to execute the wrath upon him that does evil. Wherefore, you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but for conscience sake. That's two different things. You're going to stay out of trouble by being subject, but conscience sake, you got to as well do it because God expects it of you, and if you don't, God is going to hold you accountable for not being subject to the powers that be. For this cause, pay your taxes, pay tribute. They are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Patience. If you're going to preserve your life through the difficulties that are coming. Let's back up a little bit and look at how Paul set this up before coming to Romans chapter 13. Let's go back to Romans chapter 12, verses 17 and 18. Powerful words. Hard words to live up to. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Now that is really adversarial toward human nature, isn't it? When somebody does something evil to us, it's time for payback. At least at some point there will be payback, an opportunity for me to pay them back. Just wait until the resurrection, when I'm ruling, and they come up in the resurrection, they're going to find out. That's our attitude. We're probably not going to be in that resurrection. Our attitude is not, our attitude has to be that we are not ever in our heart going to recompense evil for evil. Knowing this, we will receive evil from many people because we are not a part of this world. Recompense to no man, evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Honesty and truth, they're very close friends, aren't they? They're kin to each other. Provide honesty, that is to say, God's truth, to all men, in the sight of all men. And if it is possible, now this is said, if is if, because it's if. You know, if is put there because sometimes it's not going to be possible. If it be possible. Now, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. Now, that the problem with that comes whenever they start trying to force you to be disobedient to God. Now, I'm confident we're going to see our government more and more trying to force us to be disobedient to God in one way or the other. This world's coming apart. And our attitudes here that are being addressed, that these are really talking about things like inappropriate anger. I mean, you've got to take it patiently. That's what it's saying. And you have to do these things. Live peaceably as much as possible with all men. Patience has a work. You know, we all think about, we have a job. We go to our job. We do whatever it is that the job requires of us. For 40, 50 years was involved in job as a contractor. I had to produce certain results in that job. Many of you, all of you, probably in one way or another, have had a job which you had to produce a work in. Patience has a work. Here's what James has to say about it. Let's look in James. It's a way kind of James blows out of the chute with his book. James chapter 1, verse 2. Terrible, another terrible difficulty here. We think about these things as we approach the Passover and our need in our lives to be able to develop different characteristics which are going to serve us well as we serve the truth of God. My brethren, count it all joy. I made a big mistake many years ago when one of the first sermons I ever gave, count it all joy. That was the title of the sermon, and I really used this verse of Scripture and talked about how good it was for you to have trials. So God let me have quite a few trials not too long after that sermon. And then I still understand the Scripture in the same way, but I don't want to be as bold and putting it forward as I was at that point. Count it all joy. Now, you're going to go through difficulties. It's going to talk about some of those difficulties. We might expand on some of the difficulties, but count it all joy when you fall into different temptations. The word here is trials. It says from the original Greek, whenever you are put to the proof. God puts us to the proof. He gives us instruction, and he puts us to the proof. Why does he put us to the proof? Doesn't he know whether or not we're ready? Well, he knows. And when he puts us into one of these trials, he's often putting us there because he knows that we need strengthening in a given area. It isn't that he doesn't know about us, it's that we don't know about ourselves, maybe. We think we don't need this. Count it all joy when you fall into different difficulties. Knowing this, the trying, here's the reason why when you're tried, you're put under these difficulties. Trying of your faith works patience. Now let's say I have a health trial. And I ask people to pray for me in that trial, and I have not received the healing that it seems to me like I should have. It's a trial. I'm being put to the proof. Do I have the faith to trust God? Patience. It says, has a work. Your faith, the trying of your faith, works patience. Patience is a characteristic that God expects for us. I think it's probably something we could see from the fruits of God's Spirit. We need patience. If we're being tried because of a health problem, it isn't just about our physical health. It's about spiritual characteristics. One of those is patience. How long do I have to be patient? I look at the example of Mark Buchholz. Thought about him while I was doing this. He's in his, I guess he's entered his mid-20s now. He has had his neck broken the day he was born. He's been in a wheelchair. And he has had to be patient for quite a long time, hasn't he? And probably, unless God intervenes in what we would regard as a great miracle, is there such a thing as a great miracle and a small miracle? A miracle is a suspension of the natural laws of nature. But Mark will probably die still a quadriplegic because his neck has been broken. Unless God, which God might do, I don't set this aside as a possibility. It is a possibility. God could miraculously heal him at some point. And who knows why he's in the condition that he's in. That's one kind of trial that we could have. There are other kinds of trials that you can think of in your life. But patience, these trials work patience in your life. And in patience possess you your souls. As this world, this is a physical manifestation of the world of the word soul, as this world comes apart. What about financial problems? We can have trials as well and financial problems. I imagine that The people in Russia right now are being tried extraordinarily difficultly because of what has happened that they had no part of, but it was done by different governments. So they're going to live through it. Death of a loved one, that can be a great trial for someone, can't it? Marital problems can be trials. Trying of your faith works patience. Whatever these trials are, when you have that, it's working patient. Verse 4. Let patience, it's an imperative, let patience have her perfect work. You know, these trials should be working patience in you. Now, and if we don't take it in the right way, they can be working resentment, they can be working anger, they can be working all kinds of disobedience and unholy attitudes in us. Many people respond to their trials in that way. Patients should have, you know, we talked about, you have a job, there's a work to be done in your job. Patients should have a perfect work that you might be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. So there is a work that this spiritual characteristic of patience is to do in you and in me. Trials work patience. Patience brings about good attitudes. Key in that is to maintain your vision. See that there's, through all of these trials, through all of these difficulties, there is a purpose. The purpose has to do with building patience in you and I, which God wants and needs for us to be able to fulfill a position in His kingdom. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 18. If we maintain this, then we'll be able to take the trial as something worthwhile. Where there is no vision, Proverbs 29 and verse 18. We don't have a vision, we don't see the purpose in it, we don't understand what's going on, we don't know why we are suffering the thing that we are suffering. We don't have any vision. If we can see a purpose, and if we understand the purpose has to do with what James says here, patience. Then this doesn't apply to us. Where there is no vision, the people perish. So if we don't maintain that vision, the trial will get us. That's what it's saying. He that keeps the law, happy is he. Looking at this world from the perspective of the Bible, the world is going to go completely into dissolution. Isaiah chapter 59, let's read about 5 verses there. This is a doctor again diagnosing this world. What is the problem? How are we going to get out of it? The way of peace they do not know. There is no judgment in their goings. They've made crooked paths. Whosoever goes in there shall not know peace. This world is not going to know peace, because that's a really good description of what this world is like. Verse 9, therefore is judgment far from us, neither does justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in the darkness. We grope for a wall. Now, these are all allegorical things. We're seeking something we think we know the way to, but we don't begin to know the way to these things. And we're like a blind man, groping at a wall. Now, Marty's pretty good at that, you know. I was kind of walking through those doors over there where Nicholas is standing, and he says, "No, I always go through this other door." He understands this room very well and where everything is. So he's not groping at the wall, although physically he is blind. This is talking about the spiritual blind. We grope for the wall like the blind. And we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men. We roar like bears and mourn like doves. We look for judgment. There is none. Salvation, it is far from us. I'm reading a description not of you and I or God's people, but of this world as the world is getting to the point of coming apart. Our transgressions are multiplied, verse 12. Before you, our sins testify against us. Our transgressions are with us. And as for our iniquities, we know them. Verse 13, and transgressing and lying against the Lord, departing from our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood. Parable of the seeds. I'll conclude with this from where it is said in Luke chapter 8, verses 14 and 15. Four kinds of soil, and the soil there relates to you and I. What kind of soil, what type of soil are we? And it talks about the sower, who is explained as being Christ, sowing seed. Seed falls on the four different kinds of soil. Verse 14 talks about those seed which fell among the thorns. They which fell among the thorns are they which, when they have heard, spring forth or sprout and are choked with the cares and riches and pleasures of this life, and they don't bring forth any fruit. Remember the sermonette? Abide in me, and you will bring forth much fruit. But here's the other kind of soil. Good ground. That was just leading up, just catching the context of that parable, was the seed which fell in the among the thorns, and it didn't bring forth anything. It didn't bring forth no fruit to protect, prove perfection. But the ones that fall on the good ground are they which an honest and good heart, kind of reflective of patience, isn't it? Having an honest and a good heart, having heard the word, keep it. Sanctify them by thy truth. Having heard that, they understand it, they keep it, and they bring forth fruit with patience. Bring forth fruit with patience. In your soul, in your patience, possess you your soul. But this is also a very interesting thing to note here. It is necessary. The importance of patience here is that it is necessary in order for us to bring forth fruit. What it's saying here, if you look at it, is without patience, we're not going to bring forth any kind of fruit. Patience is developed with trials and faith. In patience, you possess your souls.